Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today. We're recording this on a Tuesday for Wednesday, so if there's any big breaking news, you're not going to get it till Thursday. But I've got Jared Wade from 8 Points 9 Seconds all the way across the globe. Not across the globe, but below me. How's it going?
Going pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm good. You are currently in South America.
I am in Peru as we speak, yes.
This will make me sound like an ignorant American, but I didn't know that you could follow basketball in South America.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's getting easier. I was in Bolivia like a couple weeks ago when the season started, and yeah, they don't have so much internet there.
Not a lot, no.
I mean, you can check your email and stuff, and it's funny because I kept like talking to people about like, oh, can I go here? And like, yo, La Paz, like that's the capital, like it'll be good. And like everyone's like, yeah, there's so much internet there. And like, yeah, you can check your Facebook and email, but like trying to watch live streaming games was not so easy. So like, I had to keep like downloading like the next day and rewatching later. But here, yeah, I'm in like Cusco, which is like near Machu Picchu and stuff. And like, yeah, it's super easy.
I like the idea that there's an amount of internet. Like, oh, there's so much internet that you can get there, as opposed to just like, yeah, we've got the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the technical terms. Like, I think there's bandwidth involved.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's something about hamsters and wheels, right? Like,
I feel like you and I are kind of in the same boat in the sense that we've worked on the internet for quite a while and have very little idea of how it works.
Yeah, I just know that I go to websites and, like, I can watch a YouTube video or I can't. And, like,
right.
That's really all that matters.
Exactly. You write about a very good team, the Indiana Pacers, who have been just climbing the ranks the last couple of years, had the magical playoff run last year and the crushing defeat in Game 7, and then they just kind of got pissed off and decided to dominate the entire season this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like everyone on the team got, like, doubly as good just in the summer.
Yeah. What is it about the Pacers that – is it just having the aura of Larry Bird around that allows guys to just get better at whatever they need to get better at? The development of the team is kind of becoming the new thing to talk about with them because, like, Paul George is a superstar now. Roy Hibbert's one of the best centers in the league. Lance Stephenson is, like, a legit starter in the league and not just some guy you have to throw out there. I mean, I guess the only guy they couldn't really fix was Gerald Green, but – I don't know that anybody can fix Gerald Green.
Yeah, let's not talk about him. yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, Bird was actually gone for a while, right? And he just got back this summer. I mean, I know all the guys respect him and stuff, but, I mean, it's almost just – it's just like – they're almost like the Eastern Conference Spurs at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously the success isn't there, and let's see if this goes on for, what, 18 straight years
right.
before we start anointing them or anything. But, I mean – they haven't made any flashy moves. I mean, Paul George was a 10th pick. Hibbert, you know, they got at 17 with the J.O. trade. You know, no one was leading SportsCenter when they, you know, traded for George Hill. Lance Stephenson was a nobody. And now, I mean, they just all developed so nicely. So, like, along the same path. And, I mean, it was really, I mean, the change was when David West got there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just such a professional. And it's to the point now, I think, when everyone's talking about them this year, that his name doesn't really come up just because, you know, Paul George is obviously MVP-ish right now.
Yeah.
Roy Hibbert, as you mentioned, you know, maybe, I think Zach Lowe called him the most important defensive player in the league, like in a piece he did today or yesterday. And Lance Stephenson's just, like, really fun to talk about and fun to watch. So, like, David West is just David West. I mean, he's essentially doing the same stuff he was doing with Chris Paul 8 years ago, 7 years ago, but I mean, in the locker room and stuff, like, he's just such a presence. And, like, it was funny, during the playoffs last year, I remember hearing him say that, like, one of the big things about this team is that, like, every day, all 15 players, like, talk to one another.
Right.
And, like, that doesn't sound like a big thing, but you know what I mean? There's just, like, this professional sports thing. Like, it was always a big thing to talk about with, like, the old Red Sox teams that were okay but not very great, like 27 guys, 27 Cavs, and, like, they weren't really friends and stuff, and David West was kind of highlighting that. And then I remember, like, 3 days later hearing Paul George, like, essentially say that exact same quote, just kind of, like, reflected how much, like, he's kind of like the patriarch on this team, and everyone just, like, when he talks, which he doesn't really talk all that much, people listen, and he's just, like, the father figure. And I think it's really big because, like, Vogel says all these things and he's very optimistic, but, like, when West can kind of re-say them in the locker room,
yeah,
really get these guys to believe it. And then, like, you know, now Paul George, like, it's like swings, right? Like he realizes he's got these big bear claws and he finally figured out. And then this summer, I don't know. Again, he was amazing last year in the playoffs, but he wasn't even this. I mean, like, no. He's still like, trouble dribbling the basketball. And now he's just pulling up in the mid-range and just destroying everyone.
Yeah, that was the thing about George last year, is it seemed very forced that people wanted him to be a superstar during this playoff run. And I was just very hesitant. I'm like, I don't know, he still doesn't look like he can dribble a basketball to me. And that seems like a problem for a guy that plays on the perimeter, but clearly he was really good. Like, you know, one of the best defenders in the league. He could, you know, he's a good shooter. He can cut. He knows how to move without the ball, but it was the ability to like attack off the dribble. I'm just like, it is not there. And I don't know that he can be a superstar until it's there. And then projecting into the season, everyone's saying, oh, Paul George, Paul George. I'm like, I don't know. I still got to see it. I've seen it now. And he is absolutely, he's absolutely become a superstar in terms of talent. Maybe not a household name quite yet, but damn, like that guy can just flat out play both ends of the court. Like very few in the league.
I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, I didn't see this coming this quickly. Not at all. I mean, his evolution of getting to a point where he would be a perennial all-star was, like, plausible.
Yeah.
I remember, like, it was his first year. He didn't play much until, let's say, like, January when Jim O'Brien got fired. And then he became a starter pretty quickly after Vogel took over as an interim. And that was the year that they lost to the Derrick Rose Bulls in the first round. It was like a five-game series, you know, right. Kind of a gentleman's sweep. But it was essentially like every game was close in the last 3 or 5 minutes, and then like the Pacers just couldn't score again. But there were inklings at that point that Paul George could be like, maybe not like a defensive player of the year, but like he was just, I mean, he was guarding Rose at points. He was just closing out, just showing like an amazingly nuanced understanding of how to read space and, right. and cover guys as a 21-year-old. So me and Tim Donahue, the other guy who, you know, main guy for my site, 8.9seconds.com, check it out. we were talking about like, oh, well, I mean, there is an evolutionary like line here where we could potentially see him being an all-star. But like to see his offensive game just change so much. Just, I mean, in the playoffs somewhat, but just over the summer, like again, I don't even know how he did it.
Yeah, it's really impressive, and it is kind of weird. Like he was at point A, and then he needed to get to point D, and he was just like, "Screw it, B and C don't really matter. I'm just gonna go straight to point D. Like I'm gonna be this star all of a sudden." And I mean, you did see flashes of it, but it just seemed to come out of nowhere. And now, like the fact that you can't stop him in the middle of the floor means that you. You know, maybe you have to give him the three-point shot, which he's really good at, or you let him get to the basket, which he's amazing at. I think Birdman still remembers that dunk in the playoffs. Or now you live with the mid-range game that he's got almost every shot in that game. I mean, watching him against the Timberwolves last night, or Monday night, it was just kind of this crazy thing of like, okay, he got into the middle of the floor. Oh, he's still scoring on them. Like it didn't really matter where he got to. It's almost like every spot on the floor is his spot.
Yeah, and it's just it's not that he's making a bunch of mid range. Again, Zach Lowe wrote a really good piece for Grantland today. I think he's been shooting like 58% from the mid range, which you know probably isn't going to continue. But it's just the way that he's doing it. The way he's kind of like getting through. You know, getting over a pick or getting past a pick and then kind of like pulling it back a little bit and then just kind of just like fading a little bit or just kind of like regathering and stepping through. And it's just he didn't know how to do that like 4 months ago.
Right. It almost seems like maybe a decent comparison of him on offense would be at least the way he's finding space in these mid-range shots is almost like Vince Carter back when Vince Carter was really good. How he can just kind of he can lean to one side, he can lean back a little bit, but his release point's still so good that you feel confident wherever he is.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
I don't know. The problem with the Pacers against the Heat last year were, you know, George Hill's. I think George Hill's really good. He's excellent. He's one of my favorite point guards, but he doesn't handle the ball all that well for a point guard, and when they were trapping him and rushing guys at him, you just kind of wondered where's the initiation of the offense going to come. But if Paul George can do that now, I don't know that you necessarily need a change in the backcourt at any point.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I actually want to look at a few of the past games and actually count these numbers, but it's almost like they don't have a point guard at this point.
Yeah.
George Hill, you know, brings it up throughout the beginning of the game and stuff, but like especially towards the end of the Knicks game, I mean, the entire last 4 or 5 minutes and in the, throughout the overtime, Paul George brought up, and even just in the second quarter and whatever throughout the year, it's almost as likely that Lance Stevenson will bring the ball up as George Hill will. It's just almost like, you know, if West or Hibbert gets the ball, it's just whoever's closest, they just give it to him. And then it's not like you see Hill kind of like being upset about it. He very easily, or, you know, very eagerly just goes over the side and starts, you know, just, you know, spots up on the wing or in the corner.
Do you think that maybe the development came from the fact that, you know, David West comes to the team, he is such a leader, like you said, and they're just terrified that if they don't develop, he's going to kill them? Because that guy, I mean, you know, the Timberwolves have Nikola Pekovic and Kevin Love, who are very physical players. And I wrote this for A Wolf Among Wolves on the recap. It's like, this is just a horrible matchup because the Wolves get away with so much inside because they are physical and they draw fouls, except you can't be physical against the Pacers because they're just so much better at it. Like, they just bully you, and it's not a oh, they're cheating or anything. No, they're just like, all right, you want to be physical, we're going to bump you back, and we're stronger than you. And that's all, like, predicated on David West's ability to be an actual tank. And it just, I don't know. I mean, you can clearly beat them. Like, the Heat did it in 7 games last year, but I don't know how you deal with that on random nights throughout the regular season. I guess that's part of the reason they're 13-1.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely Roy Hibbert was, I don't want to say he was soft, but his first couple of years in the league, he was kind of quick to make up excuses and kind of like, you know, look at the refs a lot. And now, I mean, he just doesn't do that really anymore. He almost like holds his teammates very accountable. Like last night at one point, he yelled out, "Orlando Johnson, stop fouling," like after like he picked up his second foul in 3 minutes or something like that. And, you know, I don't usually talk about the refs too much, but like it seemed as though the Pacers were getting some rough calls last night.
It was the only reason the Wolves were still in the game late in the third quarter, because, I mean, the Wolves draw a ton of fouls anyway, and they get to the free throw line a lot. But, and I would say over half of the calls Kevin Martin's gotten this year, I'm just like, wow, I can't believe they gave it to him. And Kevin Love gets some pretty generous calls too. But even last night, I was like, Jesus, this is the only reason this is a game right now, is because the refs are, I wouldn't say they were favoring the Timberwolves. I don't think it was a conscious effort, but maybe they felt bad for the physical play they had to undertake, and were just like, oh, let's give them a couple.
Yeah, there was one just little like kick by Kevin Martin, and there was one like another just West was just battling for position on the post. Like, I wouldn't even say battling. Like, he was just kind of like backing down a little bit.
He was just existing.
Exactly. He was just, yeah. And yeah, they called it. But anyway, I think it was like 21-6 at one point on the fouls. And but anyways, normally like David West got attacked, George got attacked, but like that's what I'm saying. Hibbert's response was to yell at Orlando Johnson for like fouling a jump shooter, not to like talk to the ref. So he's kind of very stoic at this point. And that's both mentally and like his physicality has just become much more impressive and imposing. And it really wasn't that way that much before David West got there. I mean, I don't know if it's all because of that, but it just seems to me, being around a guy like David West, who, you know, I think if he wasn't an NBA basketball player, like if he was 5'8", like he'd be a lumberjack or something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just his mentality in life. So I think just being around that type of a dude for so long, like, it's got to rub off. And the better and better Hibbert's gotten, the more like he's done the MMA stuff and actually been able to use his body in ways that he just couldn't when he was 23. Yeah, I mean, he's just a hulking human being.
Hibbert was interesting because he used to just, I mean, he still does a little bit, but he just fell down at the most random time. It wasn't like he got knocked over. He would just, standing there, he would fall down maybe 3 or 4 times a game, like a couple of years ago. And I always thought it was funny. Like, I'm watching Pacers games,
oh,
and
I'm
like, oh, Roy Hibbert's on the ground again. Like, what? It's like this, like the football scene in Wedding Crashers. Like, what are you doing? Every time I look over, you're on the ground. And it was funny. And then, you know, things started to click. He got more coordinated. Maybe that's the MMA training. And once he got more coordinated, it was, he's a great rebounder now. And, you know, the offense is a little inconsistent, but I don't even know that matters for that team because now they have Paul George and they've always had David West, and George Hill can score and they have a bench that can score now. And now Hibbert just gets to be this like bouncer at a club who's just not letting people, you know, he's just telling everyone they're not on the list, and he's blocked more shots than I think like 11 or 12 teams or something like that. And I think his improvement is some of the most impressive we've seen in the league in the last 10 years, because he used to be really funny to watch, and now it's just like kind of, you almost feel defeated watching your team go against him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like every game we do like post-game grades, we call it, where we rank each player. And like, I mean, I think when I was looking after the game last night, Roy Hibbert had like 6 or 4 points, and it's just, I mean, it's not even unusual, and I don't even like change my grade based on that. Like, unless he has like under 5 points or like over 20, like I almost don't even notice anymore.
Yeah,
because like, I mean, everything he's doing is on the other end. And I mean, he changed a bunch of shots. He, I don't know how many blocks he had last night, but again, like, that's almost irrelevant. Like, he's averaging whatever, 4.5 blocks a game, but like, it's just how often guard like pulls up or just like dumps it off instead of like trying to shoot over him that just, you know, completely changes everything. And I mean, he still does fall down quite a bit, and he's still pretty funny. But it's usually on the offensive end. Like, it's almost like on defense, he's completely figured out like how to retreat,
right,
and like stay in control of his body. Whereas sometimes in offense, he'll just like tangle up his own feet, or just like, you know, he'll try to do one of those sweeping hook shots and, you know, trip over somebody or something like that. But I mean, like, one of the most impressive things I've seen this year was in the Knicks game. It was Melo one-on-one in transition. Like, I don't know why Hibbert was back, but he just got to the ball, the block, took like one step back, retreated, completely made Melo like miss, but also got the offensive foul call. Like, it was just crazy. Like, not that Melo is, you know, Dwayne Wade or like, you know, DeMar DeRozan, like with his footwork and stuff like that, but like, the ability to make him commit the offensive foul in that situation was just really, really impressive.
What the whole this became like a something I think that really annoyed a lot of basketball fans last year, but it's, I don't know, it's a rule and it's a strategy for defending. Like, the whole idea of verticality, Hibbert kind of seems to be the poster child of that, because one, he's like, what, 7'3"? I mean, he's just a gigantic man. And two, he's one of the better centers at that. I mean, Omer Sheik's really good at it. Joakim Noah's really good at it. But Hibbert was like the, maybe it's just because they beat the Knicks, but in the playoffs, but it was, Hibbert was like the verticality guy, because people were just complaining about it all the time, saying it wasn't fair, or, you know, he was getting the benefit of calls. And it just seemed like, I don't know, he is standing straight up right now, and that is, you're allowed to do that if you're a defensive player.
Yeah, no, I'm totally. It's funny because it's, I think when he started to do it, especially, and like the other guys who did, like you say, it was like a Sheik, Noah, like Gasol.
Yeah,
it was almost like these. It was like these guys that did it because they weren't like athletic enough to like, you know, do some sort of Dwight Howard or even like a Stromile Swift style of like just like jump in and like go for like a, you know, a paratrooper block. Like, just they kind of figured out that they weren't those type of players, and they were just better at trying to lower your field goal percentage rather than, you know, swipe at a ball. And I think Hibbert, for whatever reason, maybe through the MMA stuff, just learned his own body. Like, it's not like he's Larry Sanders athletic or something like that, but he seems like a little more athletic than the Ashi Gasol guys who do it. So like, he actually has like body control a little bit in the air, so it's almost like he does it in such a better way, and he's just bigger than them, that, yeah, I mean, it almost does seem a little unfair. And there's always some contact, so you see the offensive guys just really, really wanting the calls. But I mean, if you actually watch it, I mean, he's almost always going backwards.
Yeah, he's
giving up space.
Yeah, and it's almost like that Alonzo Mourning trick of he would back away a little bit to get space to really avoid contact while still contesting the shot. I wonder if that's something that he's conscious of, or it's just a natural instinct for him.
Yeah, and I wonder too about the thing that I was talking about before. Like, he doesn't really complain a super lot to the refs, so maybe like between that and them kind of making verticality like a point of emphasis.
Yeah.
Like, it does seem like he gets away with it a little bit. Like, there's usually maybe some like elbow to elbow contact that, like, who knows who initiates it, but like, he seems to get the benefit of the doubt some, but it's not like ridiculously amount of benefit of the doubt. And usually that stuff's a little bit incidental contact.
They're off to such a great start at 13-1 and just dominating. They're the second best net rating in the league. Is there a certain win total you think they have to get to, or do they have to be the number one seed for Roy Hibbert to kind of be guaranteed the defensive player of the year? I know it's still so early, but I mean, he does seem to be everybody's favorite right now. But I wonder, just because it is such a small market team, if that will come back to haunt them, if someone has a good second half. Like, is there a certain threshold you think the team has to get to for him to get that kind of respect?
I mean, I think top two in the East, and honestly, I just think he's got it. I mean, I think it's already a lock, unless, yeah, you know, whatever, unless he gets injured, like whatever, Larry Sanders blocks 14 shots a game the rest of the season, you know, right, or something like that. But I mean, it's a big man award, right?
And right,
like, Gasol's hurt. Who else is really going to get it?
Dwight hasn't been good enough.
Right.
And not like, even close, yeah.
LeBron or Tony Allen or Iguodala's hurt, but like, you know, one of those maybe perimeter guys who you would think might get it, like, how can they really like stamp their name on the voters' consciousness enough by playing perimeter defense to really change what Hibbert's doing currently? You know.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. It does make me wonder. I mean, they've talked about this. They're gunning for the top seed in the East. They want home court advantage throughout the playoffs. They don't want to have to play a game seven on the road again in this campaign. And it's shown. I don't know, like, I think every once in a while we start thinking teams are trying too hard in the regular season and should be gearing towards the playoffs, but this team's so young and so good that I don't know that that would be a... I don't think that's a bad thing for them to kind of tax themselves in the playoffs, and especially like that first round series in the East, if you're the one seed, you're basically getting a week off anyway, right? So they can kind of rest. I mean, I'm sure the Washington Wizards are going to be a real tough battle for them in those four games in the first round. But like, I think them going for that number one seed does set them up probably better than any other team in the playoffs in terms of, you know, getting a chance to contend for the title.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I mean, they were obviously as close as they could be last year. And the two players we're talking about the most, Hibbert and George, have made huge leaps and bounds. I mean, the bench is way better. And that's one of the things. I mean, like, if you need to play Luis Scola 30 minutes a game and just give David West some nights off in the last week or two of the season, like, I mean, the defense gets a little worse just because you lose a little bit of that bruising, you know, force, but like, it's not that big of a deal. You know, Tony Granger's going to be there if you want to give Paul George a few nights off. Like, CJ Watson can start a game. I mean, CJ Watson started three of the first five games and they won them all. And I mean, the bench is actually good. I mean, it's not like amazing. There's no like Jamal Crawfords or anything like that, but it's just solid. And even guys like Orlando Johnson and Solomon Hill seem to be like dudes that you can plug in with three or four of those starters, and like the defense doesn't lose that much just because it's so, you know, team principled and things like that. So yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any problem with them kind of just going all out for the one seed and trying to win whatever. It's so early, but like 62 games or something, you know, whatever,
right?
You know,
and that bench is that was such an awful, awful thing. I mean, they could play defense, but they just, you couldn't get any scoring out of them. Hansbrough was a guy that could mix it up, but he didn't, you know, he didn't finish well. I hammer this point all the time, and I'm sure people are sick of it, but like, DJ Augustine just isn't a good point guard. Like, he's no. So bad at shooting the ball. He doesn't create. That was just such a minus for them when he would come into the game. And now, I mean, they might even be too deep at certain positions because Chris Copeland hasn't gotten that much run, right?
No, almost none. They actually gave him Jan Mahimi's minutes the other night against, not Boston, the other one, on Saturday. But they just did go small, and it was like, it would be like Copeland and Scola were out there for a while. I think Copeland was out there with West for a little bit, and it didn't go so well. I mean, it just wasn't great. And then, so now, you know, Vogel said it was an experiment. It's almost funny. Like, it's like they can't get him minutes, and he hasn't been terrible. I mean, he hasn't been great. He does what he does. He just sits on the perimeter and shoots threes.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, not bad for, I guess, is what their 10th or 11th man right now.
Right. And it's a point where, like, do you even consider Granger part of the plan this season, or is he just kind of icing on the cake if he comes back and he can be a weapon?
I mean, I expect him back like full by Christmas. I mean, I'm not around the team. I'm in Peru, but like, I mean, I know his knee is supposed to be all right. It's like a calf thing right now, and I think they're just being super cautious. And I mean, why would you rush him back? Like,
Right.
they obviously don't need him. So I mean, yeah, I mean, he's gonna take like Orlando Johnson's minutes. Orlando Johnson's playing like 15 minutes a game. He'll take some of his, and let probably some of Lance Stevens is playing a lot right now. So probably like Paul George will play a little more with the second unit, and Danny Granger will move over to the three and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I think he'll be a part of the team quite a bit. I mean, maybe just a spot up shooter, but
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah,
he's
I mean, you're
stuff.
probably not running your offense through him anymore at this
Right, but even
point.
if he's just in the corner, I mean, like, if even if he's just in the corner and like, kind of like Rashard Lewis was when the Magic were really good,
Right.
like I'm pretty sure he can hit 42% of those shots.
Yeah.
He's a really good shooter.
Yeah. What do you think of, I mean, how do you like their chances? Again, it's early, but do you think that this is a team that will really push the Heat? I mean, out of the playoffs if they get home court advantage.
I think it really probably comes down mainly to Dwayne Wade. I
Yeah.
mean, he's been pretty shaky the last 2 years in the playoffs against the Pacers anyways. Like 2 years ago, he kind of like was horrible for 4 or 5 games. Like had his knee drained, and then he did have like one monster game that kind of put him out. I guess he was fine last year, but he just always seems like he's permanently not right anymore.
Yeah.
LeBron's LeBron, but I mean, there's just so many weapons on Indiana. So I mean, yeah, I mean, going into the season, even before, Derrick Rose was gone, I thought it was a 50-50 shot that they would beat Miami and make the finals.
Did
I think
you?
it's probably as good, if not better than that now. Just,
Yeah.
who knows with injuries, but the way that the Knicks and the Nets look, I mean, it seems like it's going to be a pretty cakewalk schedule all year, so.
Yeah. Did you think it was, well, especially, oh my God, that division they play in is, I mean, especially now with the Rose injury, I don't know, I don't remember who they lost to, but that should be 16 wins, right?
Yeah, they lost to the Bulls
Oh,
with
they did lose the
Rose.
bowl. Okay, so they should go 15-1. Like, there's no reason not to have such an easy time within their own division.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Drummond or someone going nuts one game and the Pistons squeaking one out. But yeah, I mean, Cleveland and Milwaukee are. I mean, that's what's funny is like the Clippers last year, right? They went on that huge run, and I don't know if anyone took them super seriously, but it looked like they might be contender at that point. Obviously, it didn't work out, but like. This Pacers start just seems so much different because, like, when they're playing the Celtics or Milwaukee or the Cavs or something, it's just like they're not going to lose. Like, they're just way too much better, and they play, defense doesn't take nights off, right, or doesn't slump
Right.
or whatever. So like, it just seems like unless they really shoot like 35% and can't make a shot, it just seems like they can't lose to these teams.
Is Frank Vogel like as fun, because I know you're not like around the team, but is he as fun to like just read on a nightly basis? I had a blast covering him or covering that team in the playoffs last year, the few games I was around them. I think I was around them for four of the Eastern Conference games, and talking to him like after practices and stuff, like that guy was just fun to talk basketball with. Even like, it wasn't a lot of coach speak. He was very like kind of down to earth and would just talk to you, but he just seems like a fun coach to root for.
He is. He's just such a nice guy. I mean, I think he started to do it kind of like as a joke after a while. But after the like pregame, talking to the media thing, he would always say to everyone, he's like, "All right, guys, good luck with your deadlines." He was just like that type of guy. He just, obviously I don't know him off the court at all, but he, just seems like a really nice guy, and he loves to talk hoops. So, and I think, especially in the last like year or so, like now that people actually give a crap about Indiana, I mean,
Yeah.
I've been in that locker room, like in New York or Brooklyn or something, and there's like four or five reporters in there, and they're just asking their deadline questions, like,
Right.
"Oh, okay, oh, we're gonna do the Lance Stephenson is here story. Let me ask two questions about that. Let me ask, how's Paul George?" Like, so then, like, I think as usually happens with us kind of bloggers, right? We'll talk to the coach or we'll talk to somebody, and just ask like, "Oh, well, in the third quarter, I noticed the pick and roll was blah 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 blah." And like, yeah, you can see like he really likes talking about that stuff.
Yeah.
He's very, and almost like there have been times where I've like ended the conversation where I'm just like, "Okay, well, I guess I've been talking to you for 6 minutes now. We should probably stop this." But he's like, he's willing to keep talking. I'm just like, "All right, well, you probably have a job, right? I gotta get out of here.
He'll get a great chance at Coach of the Year. Roy Hibbert for Defense Player of the Year. You know, Paul George probably won't win MVP. They'll probably give it to LeBron because he's shooting 60% from the field, but he'll be up there. I don't see why Lance Stevenson.
Is that good? Yeah. Is that good, 60%?
That sounds high. That sounds really high. Like, I didn't know you could do that as a non-Tyson Chandler person.
Right.
Like, it blows me away, but... You know, Lance Stevenson.
And but that's the funny thing. Like, no one's even talking about it, right? Like, it's
right.
So good at this point. It's not even a big deal.
Like, right. I was going off on that on Twitter Monday night, and then on Tuesday's podcast, we kind of talked about it a little bit. I'm just like, the fact that this is routine. I mean, it took me like three viewings of the Heat box score to register, like, oh, 35 points on 14 shots is actually not normal. Like, that's a ridiculous thing to do. We should be looking at this. And then I think, like, Cooper Moorhead from Heat.com, you know, started talking about the 60-40-80 club. I'm like, what is going on? Like, that's just not normal. It's almost unfair to Paul George at this point.
Yeah, but I could actually see, I mean, again, it's so early. The Pacers are about to go on a road trip and probably lose a few games. They have Miami right when they get back. You know, I mean, there's some real teams that exist in this league. And
yeah.
it'll probably be a little shocking for Indiana when they're like, oh, wait, everyone's not the Celtics? This is weird. So I'm sure he'll slow down. But, like, I could see someone getting it, too, just from the voter fatigue thing.
Yeah.
You know, the way Karl Malone got his or whatever, you know?
Right. Do you think that they have troubles, ahead of them in terms of the next – few years keeping this team together, because there's so much talk about the salary or the luxury tax implications, and this team is kind of pushed up against it now with what they've got. I mean, I know Granger comes off the books, but then you've got George's extension kicking in. Is there any concern that this is not a long-term core? I mean, I know David West is also, you know, getting up there, but can they keep this together and keep the momentum going in a Spurs-like way?
I mean, the really question comes with the Lance Stevenson thing, and like, I think we'll have a better understanding at the end of the year of what Lance Stevenson is, like how instrumental, you know, he is. And he's still Lance Stevenson. Like, there's still maybe a question mark of whether or not you really want to give him a 4-year deal at a bunch of money. But
right.
One thing, and this was in that low piece I keep mentioning, Paul George actually negotiated for, he's getting a 27% max if he makes All NBA this year, rather than the 30% max.
Yeah.
So that actually is going to save them like $2 million a year.
Oh, okay.
Which will give them like in the ballpark of maybe like between like $6 to $8 million a year to give Lance, which, I mean, I can see, you know, I mean, it's so tough to say, like, with the Tyreek Evans deals and things like this out there, what some team will give Lance. But I mean, if he wants to stick around and they can give him seven, you know, that's keeping the core four together for, you know, several years with Hill, Lance, George, and Hibbert. I mean, West will still be there until he gets too old to be good. But
yeah,
I mean, I think they were one game away last year with the worst bench you could ever imagine.
Right.
So, I mean, just finding a few, like, Patrick Beverley types, you know, Gary Neal types that, you know, the fifth Spurs seem to find all the time, you know, picking 25th in the draft and getting a guy or two, you know. Orlando Johnson's a fine little bench player. Yeah, I mean, I think they can contend for the next 4 years pretty, like, I'd be glad if they don't.
It's kind of crazy, but you brought up Tyreek Evans when talking about Lance Stevenson. I just thought, oh my God, I would so much rather have Lance Stevenson right now than Tyreek Evans.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean,
I can't, I mean, if you said that 3 or 4 years ago, that would have been crazy. That's
I think Lance is in the perfect role. He's the fifth most reliable player, the fifth most, like, expected to do anything player
in
every game. So, like, everything he does is still like, oh, wow, nice. Like, wow, he got a rebound and broke it down the court and did, like, a reverse playoff. And then, like, once in a while he'll do, like, the same thing and turn the ball over really weirdly. So, like, if he's your second best player, like, I don't know. Like, it could just be, like, a weirder cultural thing. But, like, when he is standing in line behind, you know, West, Paul George, Hibbert, and George Hill, again, like, is not the same kind of David West guy, but just as, like, professional and, like, a presence in the locker room as that type of guy. Like, Lance almost has to stay in line.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not like he's some crazy, like, off the court antic guy next day, but like on the court, just being a little wild and crazy.
He's not. He's not Steven Jackson.
Exactly. Right. And like, but I could right. I could see him being more like JR, taking a lot more JR Smith shots.
Yeah.
On a team where he's second or third best player, whereas like, Frank Vogel, David West, and George Hill all look at you and you're like, oh, okay, I need to, you know, kick that out next time.
Did you know that you could get a technical foul for a ball fake? that was the worst technical foul I've ever seen.
It was pretty bad.
I don't understand it. I don't like. I guess it's the he's taunting him or something. Like Jordan used to do that all the time. Like these just weird like because you know these weird these guys who can just palm the ball so easily like it's a tennis ball. They would do these weird ball fakes, and I don't understand what Lance did wrong.
He does it all the time. He loves doing it. Like,
yeah.
He probably likes doing it more than Jordan does.
It's crazy. Like I was so angry at that call, and I rarely get angry at the refs.
And it's so funny because he's like such a guy who like, you know, with his body language and his emotions on his sleeve, like to a fault, like he just can't not. And like, there's 10 times a game where he looks more upset at the refs and like, you know, like he should be getting looked at by the rest of me, you know, more than that. And like, yeah, just like, what? Almost like a Ron Artest style, you know, like sometimes Ron Artest will get those like reputation calls.
Right.
It's just like, he didn't do anything. What's wrong?
All right, my last question for you before I let you go back to the beautiful mountains of Peru. They have mountains there, right? That's where Machu Picchu was like high up, right?
Yeah, it was at 5,000 meters a day, yeah.
I don't know what a meter is, but that sounds high.
It's like 15,000, 16,000 feet, maybe?
Okay, yeah, that's really high.
Couple miles.
If if you had to choose right now, do the Indiana Pacers win the NBA title? I need a hot sports take.
It's so hard to root against or to pick against LeBron. I mean, it's just honestly like it's almost like, you know, the Tiger versus the field thing that everyone used to do.
Right.
But I'm going to say yes. Let me say yes.
Okay.
I think they're a more complete team. They'll get Granger back. I think the Heat will have some sort of difficulty, like, really gearing themselves up again. And, I mean, they almost lost last year, right? Like, they barely won the finals. So, yeah, I'll say yes.
All right.
I seem like it sucks. I haven't seen them in West camps, but
The Spurs are really good, but
Spurs are amazing.
Yeah.
Aside from the Spurs, everyone else seems not sucks as bad. I mean, they actually have tons of teams, but this elite isn't quite there.
Right. Absolutely. Well, Jared, we can read you at 8points9seconds.com. Follow you at Jared_Wade, correct?
Yes.
And I will be talking to you, my friend, and have fun in South America.
Will do.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, man.